Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have Charles Hughes Smith, author, leading global finance blogger, and we call him America's philosopher. He's the author of 9 books on our economy and society, including A Radically Beneficial World, Automation, Technology, and Creating Jobs for All, Resistance, Revolution, Liberation, A Model for Positive Change, and The Nearly Free University and the Emerging Economy. His blog of twominds.com has logged over 55 million page views and is number 7 on CNBC's top alternative finance sites. Welcome, Charles.
Thank you, Richard. That probably overstates my expertise, but I am fascinated by all the financial events that are unfolding in our era.
Yeah, it's crazy out there. Today's topic would like to focus in on one bubble, the commercial property, commercial real estate bubble. This appears to be not only something that's happening in the U.S., but globally. Your thoughts, Charles?
Well, Richard, when you proposed we talk about this, I pulled up some charts, and one of them we could start with is the price index, the commercial property price index, which has now exceeded the previous bubble top in the 2007-2008 period by about 25%. So we've got a bubble that exceeds the previous high.
Yeah.
And that should, alert us to the potential for some downside here. And if we look at commercial real estate loans at banks, then we see the chart almost as an exact overlay of the price action. In other words, we've got more loans by about 25%, basically $2 trillion of U.S. In commercial real estate loans. And so what makes that sort of sobering is if we look at the retail square footage per capita, in other words, per person, then we find that the United States is it has multiples, and so does Canada, actually, has multiples of what other countries, advanced post-industrial countries like France and Italy, they have like 2 or 3 square foot per person, and the U.S. has almost 25, and Canada has almost 15. So it looks like we've got a situation where there's a lot of leveraged debt on an overbuilt sector.
And you mentioned also they're still building, and there's a lot of places that have been overbuilt.
Yeah, I dug up a chart that says retail space under construction. Now, this was a year ago, first quarter 2016, but there's millions of square feet of shopping centers, malls, and specialty centers still under construction. And as you and I were speaking about before we started recording, now if these are all in extremely hot markets, like Toronto or Vancouver, Silicon Valley, Brooklyn, of course, then this there's going to be a demand for this kind of space. But these white hot markets are fairly limited, and so there's a suspicion that there's a lot of space being added to an already extended inventory.
So what's happening here? Is this the result of various aspects of financial repression in terms of repressed low interest rates by central bank policies? Is it also due to a massive credit expansion around the world, from various increases in debt or quantitative easing programs?
Yeah, Richard, I think we all know that these kinds of bubbles in fixed assets are driven by super low interest rates and enormous liquidity and a tremendous expansion of credit. I mean, the number that sticks in my mind is China's banking sector and shadow banking sector have, by most accounts, created $30 trillion dollars, U.S. dollars equivalent in new credit in the past few years. And so these trillions of dollars of new credit money is now sloshing around the world. And you just mentioned to me, told an anecdote about real estate in Toronto, which we all know is beyond white hot.
Yeah, this is in the residential market, but essentially there was a location just north of Toronto a couple of months ago where they had planned, and it hasn't been built yet, approximately 70 townhomes for prices in the over 1 million type of range. And we wanted to take a look. My wife and I, we stopped by later in the afternoon on the first day they opened the showroom. And by 4 p.m., everything had been sold. Just one day. That whole showroom was built just for that one day of showing. And the majority of the buyers were mainland Chinese buyers, many from Shanghai. And then the question is, you know, why is this happening? Are they looking for a plan B as there's an emerging credit bubble crisis in China? Is it just, money looking to be parked somewhere from all of the credit expansion? Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the anecdotal evidence. Like when I speak to my Chinese friends who are from the mainland, then all of their friends, you know, everybody that has good jobs and an income and some savings, I mean, every one of them has not only multiple properties in China, but they are seeking, as you say, a safe haven or a plan B in Australia, the U.S., Canada, and perhaps a little at the very high end in Europe, right? A flat in Paris or a winery in Bordeaux. But, you know, Richard, what we're really discussing is a mismatch between the amount of money pouring into commercial real estate and the actual return on that investment. Like, I have a chart here that's called U.S. metro area vacancy rates, and there's three lines. One is apartments, you know, residential flats, then there's retail, and then there's office space. Well, if we look at this chart, we can see that the residential vacancy rate has plummeted from the 2010 sort of post financial crisis peak, and it's like essentially near zero, you know, around 3 or 4%. But the retail and office vacancy rates are still hovering around 9 or 10%, which is way above where they were in 2007 and 2008. Mm-hmm. So with this vast expansion of credit, and some of that money is pouring into retail and office commercial real estate, but the demand really isn't there, and we know that because of this high vacancy rates.
So what's going to happen? You also add a chart on commercial real estate credit derivatives, which gives an indication of the risk inherent in commercial real estate. Is this indicative of rising risks in that sector?
Right. This chart is of credit derivatives, and it's fairly high risk series. It's the BBB. You know, it's not like a AAA. And so this is the kind of credit derivatives that are sensitive to risk and interest rates, right? And so there was a very steep decline, a spike down about a year ago in the first quarter of 2016 in these commercial real estate credit derivatives, which showed that there was a heightened sense of we better get out now, right? Like, and limit our exposure to the derivatives, the credit derivatives on the commercial real estate sector. And it's recovered, but it's recovered to a lower high than it was. It was quite stable all the way through 2015. So this is telling us that the financial people that are exposed to the commercial real estate sector are starting to hedge their bets and starting to pull the trigger to minimize their exposure, which means they see a heightened risk. And it's not too hard to see why. because of the, for instance, the vacancy rates I mentioned, that we're building a tremendous amount of additional space. We have high vacancy rates, and we have a lot of leveraged debt on that. That's pretty much a perfect formula for a surprising downturn, right? A bubble that pops, or a rats fleeing a sinking ship, or whatever metaphor you like. Mm. And yeah.
So do you think this could be a key catalyst for another financial crisis?
Well, Richard, I think that's a good question. And it's really why I like being on your program, is we get down to the nitty gritty in the financial realm. We're not just skipping over the surface. And we all know that the way that modern finance is structured, there is a certain domino kind of effect, you know, built into it. In other words, there's a lot of exposure in a debt, but then there's also derivatives on credit, and there's various swaps, and there's a lot of financial instruments piled on top of the original credit instrument. Mm-hmm. And so if one sector, this which is relatively modest in size, you know, we're talking about $2 trillion in loan exposure, and compared to 10 to 11 trillion, say, in residential mortgages, you might say, well, that sector is too small to have any influence. But when a sector starts caving in, it starts imploding under the weight of bad debt and low yields, then it can trigger a psychological trend change to where every player in the financial markets suddenly decides that risk is increased, and they need to exit or reduce their exposure. So they start selling other assets, not just commercial real estate. So that's where I think the danger lies, is there can easily be a domino effect. And we saw this in 2007, 2008. If you look at the size of the subprime mortgage market, I believe it was less than $1 trillion. Now, you'd look at this just based on the size. You'd say, well, there's no way that this relatively modest part of the total credit picture could collapse the entire system. But it increased the sense of risk. And as many observers, including former Fed Chair Greenspan, in an article a few years ago in Foreign Affairs magazine, he basically admitted that financial authorities like central banks can't really control that kind of sea change in the perception of risk.
Hmm. So we either get something like that in terms of a nominal crash in the commercial property market, or could it happen in real terms? By that I mean, if we look at even on the residential real estate side, some trends that have been happening recently is, especially in North America, is the idea of prices that are nominally stable or even still going higher, but in real terms going lower. So real terms meaning if you price, you know, the real estate in terms of ounces of gold or a commodity basket, you know, a basket of various commodities or inflation type of measures, that, you know, you're not able to have that preservation of purchasing power. So if you take, for example, a commercial property divided by how many, you know, cups of Starbucks coffee or Dunkin' Donuts coffee you can buy today, and then you come back and 5 or 10 years from now, you know, get a much lower number, even though maybe the nominal price has stabilized or even gone higher. Do you think it could unfold that way? Because that would also allow the governments to maintain property taxes and for various insurance type of programs, you know, for those not to be cashed in, you know, that could affect government budgets severely.
Right, Richard, that's an excellent point, because it what you're bringing to the forefront here is that there are a lot of other players that are dependent upon commercial real estate maintaining its current price structure. And of course, local government is front and center because they extract a huge sum of property taxes from commercial real estate. And it also supports their whole ecology of business. In other words, you have a business park, then you have office workers, and that supports local cafes and restaurants. And then, you know, that supports housing that's constructed near the office park. And so there's this accretive function to commercial real estate. And so if a mall dies, or its vacancy rate shoots up and customers just no longer have any reason to go there, that might be an isolated incident in terms of the local economy. But typically commercial real estate is supporting an ecology, as I said. And so once that declines and vacancy rate shoots up, it doesn't just affect the owner of that property. It affects the entire ecology of the businesses that were basically living off of that sort of concentration of workers and customers. And so I'd like to mention a longer-term trend that that eventually will impact commercial real estate, even with the financial repression of super low interest rates and abundant, you know, credit. And that's these generational changes. Like I have a chart here of the usage factor of the occupied office space per employee. In other words, how much space are employers now providing to each of their employees? And that number is plummeting from 2010. As businesses have to get more efficient, they need less office space, right? Mm-hmm. And if you combine that with flex work and working at home and teleconferencing and stuff like that, it's hard not to conclude that we as an economy, you know, certainly in North America and probably globally, are going to need less office space. And here's a quick anecdote. I mean, I was lucky enough to get invited to the new Facebook headquarters last year in Silicon Valley, actually the peninsula, and because one of our friends had a short-term job there. And it's a fun place to work. And so then it made me realize if you're just going to have a bunch of cubicles in a rectangular building, kind of a lifeless place, that's not going to cut it anymore. No, you have to have a really high-end class A space with a lot of amenities. And that's the future. But that's extremely expensive, and so you're looking at companies throwing off billions, like Apple and Facebook, who can afford this. But I just think that the average office tower or office park is history is moving against it, and you can say the same thing about retail, right? That Gordon Long and I just did a program about the millennials, and anybody that looks at it knows that millennials prefer online shopping. They're not a fan of suburban malls. Yeah. And so I think that generationally the tide of history is moving against the entire commercial real estate sector.
So what's going to happen then to all these like dead malls and just you know, a lot of corporate office space that is no longer being used to what it was originally intended for?
Right. Excellent question, Richard. And I have a chart here that just tells us what's happening in the retail space. Is the number of store closings is reached an all-time high. It's far exceeded the 2008 financial crisis peak. And so what we're seeing is a huge fleeing. And closure of the retail sector, and a lot of subletting trying to go on in the office space sector. So there's corporations and retail businesses which are shedding space because that space is no longer generating sales and profits, right? And that's the ultimate, you know, that's the ultimate core of your business, right? Is you have to have high sales that generate substantial profits. And so what do we do with all this empty space? And It's an excellent question, and a lot of people foresee the potential for moving these spaces into other uses. And I've read accounts of empty malls being used for community college classes and this kind of thing. And that's all well and good, but I think what people are missing is if you're going to rent out a huge commercial real estate space to, like, for classrooms or some industrial use, like you mentioned before the program, a solar panel assembly, that tends to rent for something like 25 cents a foot, where retail was at a dollar or even $2. So you're talking about a potential reduction.
Yes.
Of rental income of like 80%.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That value of that property is going to drop by 80%.
Wow.
Because, you know, it's so the whole reuse phenomenon will certainly be profitable to the owners in white hot markets like Toronto, Vancouver, greater New York City, is West LA. I mean, if you have a defunct commercial real estate property in one of those hot areas, well, you can easily repurpose it into rental units, residential or condos, and make a ton of money. But what about in the 99% of North America that's not white hot? You know, then you're talking about massive losses that are going to have to be absorbed by somebody. Now you spoke about the government can provide insurance and. But one way or the other, somebody is going to be absorbing these losses. And if those become, in my view, if they're orderly and they're sort of sub rosa, like they're occurring under the surface, then the system can absorb all those losses without triggering a crisis. But if it bubbles up and is basically out of control, then it has the potential of triggering perception change and risk.
So to summarize, we have a large supply out there, but also the supply is increasing, right? They're continuing to build and have overbuilt in many areas. At the same time, the demand side is low and even getting lower, right, in terms of the trends, the generational trends you mentioned, millennial changes, buy from Amazon type thing. And at the same time, there's valuations that are sky high, even higher than the financial crisis. How is this all going to end? Like, do you have a perspective on the time frame in terms of how this unfolds, when it unfolds, and the potential link to an emerging financial crisis out of this?
Right. Excellent question. And I hesitate to put a timing on it because I think one of the critical factors would be another form of financial repression, which is capital controls that actually start limiting the money that's pouring out of China.
Yeah.
In other words, we have the whole West Coast of North America. Property values are skyrocketing in Portland, Seattle, the Bay Area, L.A., Vancouver. So just as one example, and now if there's some sense that those values might be getting pricey even for foreign money seeking Plan B, then now they've moved to Toronto and Brooklyn and certain neighborhoods along the eastern seaboard. So if capital controls actually bite in China, like the government actually limits the outflow in a truly serious fashion as opposed to the sort of loophole-filled methodology they've been using to date, that could be the trigger because these valuations are super high because there's been tremendous demand from the buyer side, not demand from the end user. In other words, it's not that there's people trying to lease space in malls and office complexes. It's demand from the buyers who will take any return. And they're just seeking the safety of a return. And so, but that I think they're really treading on thin ice there for the reasons we've talked about, right? Is that the end user demand, in other words, the demand from retailers and the demand from corporations for office spaces, that could falter considerably in even a mild recession, right? Because the first thing corporations do is cut all that space that's no longer profitable. So the returns could easily turn negative for the people buying all this commercial real estate.
Do you think that'll happen soon or like in the near future? Are we talking 6 to 12 months?
Well, you know, Richard, it's an excellent question. And a lot of people I admire that they're very savvy financial observers see the pot bubbling over in 2018. You know, that there's just a lot of reasons to think there's momentum through 2017, more or less steady as she goes. But the ship will start leaking in 2018. And I personally tend to think that the ultimate crisis would be in the early 2020s, you know, 2021, something around there, simply because the central banks probably have just enough tricks up their sleeve to save the system one more time. So in other words, if we did get a global recession in, say, 2018, 2019,
right,
then they can kind of play the same sort of games,
right, right,
to keep it afloat. But that they're kind of running out of rope to do that a third time. And so I would say the ultimate the collapse of valuations is maybe the 2020 four years out instead of 2 years.
I see. Very interesting. Yeah. Well, we'll have to see how it unfolds. It's just fascinating what's happening. A great insight, Charles. How can our listeners learn more about your work?
Please visit me at oftwominds.com, and you can look at my archives and read free samples of my books and check it out.
Great. Thank you very much, Charles. We'll be back in another month or so for another discussion with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Richard. My pleasure.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.